So we did yesterday the Mishnah on Lamed Vav Lamed Beis, so now we'll start doing the Gemara on it. The Mishnah had listed three categories of things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos and you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. There were things that were Mishum Shvut, which means they're Isurim Dirabanan. There's Mishum Rishus, things that are, so to speak, optional mitzvahs. You have a choice to do them or not. And then you have things that are an actual mitzvah. No, not, well, yeah, there's the mitzvah itself. Right, but nevertheless, you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. So the Gemara goes through them one at a time. Like Erlen Be'ilin, you're not allowed to climb a tree. First we're going through the Shvus ones, the ones where there's no mitzvah involved at all. You're not allowed to climb a tree. Gzeder Shem Yitlosh, it's a gzeder because he might tear off branches. V'loy Rozhman Agave Behema, you can't ride on an animal. Gzeder Shem Yitzchut L'Tchum, it's a gzeder because you might go outside the Tchum. Rashi says when you're walking, you notice the boundaries of the Tchum. And they would put up, we learned in Erevin, they'd put up markers by the Tchum over there to note that it's the Tchum Shabbos. When you're riding, you don't necessarily notice them. They ask for what? Shmamin Tchum and Daraisa. So can you prove from that then that Tchum and Daraisa? If it was Dirabanan, you don't make Xeral. So that would imply that Tchum is an Issa Daraisa. Most Tanoim don't hold that way, only Rabbi Kiva holds that way.
You don't
make a Xero for a Xero, yeah.
Shavuos, you would make a Xero?
Right. No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't make a Xero to protect another Shavuos. So if Tchumen is only Dirabanan, then you wouldn't make another Xero of Shavuos for that sake.
If Shavuos is Dirabanan.
If Tchumen is Dirabanan, yeah. But that's most of the Tanoim hold that Tchumen is Dirabanan. Okay, the Rambam talks about the idea maybe a Tchum of 12 mil is Dirabanan and only the 2,000 one is Dirabanan, but still. Ella, so no, the reason is different. Gzeder Shem Yachdas is murder. The reason is it's a gzeder because you might cut off a branch to use to whip the animal and make it go. And that would be an Issa Daraisa, no question about it. V'lo Shotan Apnamayim, we said you can't swim in the water. That is another gzeder, Shem Yach Chavis Shoshayatin. It's a gzeder because you might make a Chavis Shoshayatin, literally means a barrel of swimmers. So Rashi describes it as that they'd take reeds and weave them together to make a sort of barrel-shaped thing. A sort of like a long barrel-shaped thing, and you'd use it when you're first learning to swim as a flotation device. Tosfos talks about that. Actually, we see that the Mishnah in Kalim that talks about the Chavis Shoshayotin and describes it as being made out of earthenware. The Tosfos explains that's what it is. It's kind of like a large bowl, and it's kind of like nowadays they make flotation devices out of plastic. Back then, apparently, they made them out of earthenware, but it was the same idea. There was air inside, and the air inside made it buoyant, and therefore you could use it to hold on to while you're learning to swim. Either way, the point is that would be making a keli. And the Mishnah said, "V'leim etapkin, v'leim esapkin, v'leim esapkin, v'leim erakkin." You're not allowed to clap your hands or bang or beat your hands on your thighs or dance. And all those gzeder shemi yisakin klei shir. It's gzeder because you might fix musical instruments to accompany you. And as we talked about yesterday, there's Tosfos already talks about the kula in that, and the Menachos talks about it, etc. So there is room to be made for, although we still have many people who are particular about it. Torah does not change with time, but sometimes we said back at the beginning of the Masechta that usually a gzera that was made the minion, usually a gzera that was made by voter based in, you can't overturn it unless you have another minion, even if the reason goes away. But not always. Sometimes we do say when the original reason is gone, then the gzera disappears as well. We say. This is one example. Another example is the fact.
It was made by 10?
Maybe not. Maybe, I mean, if it wasn't, then obviously that would be, then obviously we could just say that. But for example, I mean, we talk about throughout Shas the idea that you're not supposed to drink water that was left uncovered because a snake might have drunk from it. Nowadays, nobody's worried about that because we don't have snakes commonly around. We see there are certain things, where when the original reason goes away, then so does the Xena. But other things not, yeah. What the details are, I mean, there's far enough to deal with these kinds of things when we apply that, when we don't. The Eilein Mishum Rishus, then the Mishnah said the following are Mishum Rishus, meaning that there is a mitzvah involved, but it's sort of an optional mitzvah. The first one was Lod Donin, that you can't judge a Din Torah. The question is, what do you mean you're calling that Rishus? But a mitzvah kavid, you're doing a mitzvah by judging. The answer is, you're right, but the Mishnah has to tell us that even in a case where there is somebody greater than you available. So you don't have to be the one judging the Dittara. That greater Rav could be doing it. So for you, it's a Rishus. For him, it would be a Mitzvah. Now, on this one, and also on the next couple of them, when the Gemara asks...
Actually, so we don't generally...
No, that's the thing. You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. What we're saying is, if you're the biggest Rav in town, then for you to do it would be a mitzvah. And when you're not doing it on Shabbos, when the Chachamim are telling you not to do it on Shabbos, that's not Mishum Rishus, that's Mishum Mitzvah. But if you are the lesser Dayan anyway, then for you it's Rishus. For you it's an optional thing in the first place to do this Din Torah, because even on a weekday you could be deferring it to the greater Rav. That's the point.
Mishum Mitzvah...
So Mishum Mitzvah or Mishum Rishus, depending on your circumstances. Which actually, with each of these things, with this one, the next couple of them also, each one the Gemara is going to ask, V'hamitzvah ka'avid, aren't you doing a mitzvah? So Rashi explains that the Gemara is not asking, in fact, that you're doing a mitzvah, you should be allowed to do it on Shabbos. All the Gemara is asking, as a practical matter, you know, the Mishnah is dividing the things into three groups, Shavuos, Rishus, and Mitzvah. Why are you putting these ones in the Rishus category, when on the face of it, they should be in the Mitzvah category? So it's not a question, you should be allowed to do them on Shabbos, but why is the Mishnah categorizing them the way it is? Tosfos, on the other hand, discusses, Rabbi Natan explains that, no, actually what the Gemara is asking, well, Mitzvah Ka'avid means you should be allowed to do it. For example, judging a Din Torah. The question is, why are we not allowing you to do it on Shabbos when it's a mitzvah?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right, it does not matter.
It's not a shus.
No. It's a mitzvah in a Torah. It's a house. So why are the Chachamim forbidding you to do it?
Right.
Not the categorization. Tosfos is questioning why are the Rabbanan answering it if it's a mitzvah. The Gemara, Tosfos is explaining, the Gemara is asking, if it's a mitzvah, why are the Chachamim forbidding you to do it? And in fact, Tosfos goes through the possibilities that actually, that there might actually be cases where you are allowed to do some of these things on Shabbos. One example, we learned back in Yuma that you have the situation, a Kohen Gadol has to be married on Yom Kippur, where if his wife dies on Yom Kippur, he has to be able to be Mekadesh, a woman on Yom Kippur, even though normally you're not Mekadesh. But because of the mitzvah, you have no choice.
So what's Tosfos' answer?
So that's the answer, is that normally the Gemara is saying, V'ha mitzvah ka'avid, usually you're doing a mitzvah, and the Gemara is showing with each one of them, it's not necessarily because it's actually a reshus. In the case of the Rav, for example, in the case of the Dayan, there's a greater Dayan. So it's not necessarily a mitzvah on you. It's not necessarily a mitzvah on you. Right. And the same thing with all the other ones, but an interesting little historical sidelight on this is one of the ones that we're talking about over here is getting married. It once happened, actually, in the communities in Europe. It used to be a few hundred years ago. It used to be a very common minhag for people to get married on Friday. The reason was probably as a practical matter, that way they could combine the wedding soda with the Shabbos meal. So one time it happened in Krakow when the Namal was up there. Four or 500 years ago, that one time there was a wedding supposed to take place on Friday of a poor the girl was a poor orphan whatever. Akitzer, there ended up being an argument over the nabin or some such thing. It turned out that she wasn't going to be able to afford a nabin the size of a chassan's family was expecting. So it ended up being a whole argument. Things got delayed more and more. And by the time they were finally able to broker a compromise, it was already shot. So then the question becomes, well, normally you don't get married on Shabbos. Nevertheless, the Namal went ahead and was Masada Kedushin. And after Shabbos, he wrote a long tshuva justifying what he had done, partly based on this Tosfos, that where there is a mitzvah involved, then yes, you can...
Definitely a mitzvah.
Yeah, exactly, in order not to embarrass her, right. So nevertheless, though, afterwards, the Beis Din of Krakow got together and made a takana that from now on we're not going to allow weddings to take place on Friday, in order to avoid this kind of problem.
Where did you read this?
It's a famous story. It's found in many places. One other thing, actually, is in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about, actually, it's based on a Tosfos in Gittin, that you can have a case where you're allowed to give a get on Shabbos as well. Namely, suppose you have a person who is on his deathbed, he's a Shchiv Merah, he's childless, he's nervous about the fact that his wife is going to end up having to do Yibum or Chalitza. What if the brother is in a completely different city? What if the brother is a Meshulmah, it's going to be hard to get him to agree, etc., whatever it is. So then in that case, if you have a get pre-written before Shabbos, there are cases where you're allowed to, he's allowed to be Machna or the get on Shabbos, because there's a mitzvah involved over here, that he's a Shchidmer, you don't want him to go crazy in his final moments worrying what's going to happen with his wife. Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't want to.
We're talking about she wants. First of all, midin Torah, a woman can be divorced against her will. Also, it's only Chayim Deben Kershim that you can't. But in this case, we're talking about obviously that she also wants to. She also doesn't want to be stuck over there having to go find this brother in Yehovetzville. Yeah. Anyway. Next one, Voloma Kadshin, the Gemara, the Mishnah had said that you can't do Kiddushin on Shabbos. The question is, V'ha mitzvah kavit? Again, aren't you doing a mitzvah? You're marrying a woman for period of Rivian. And the answer is, Loitzricha de Isla Ishu Banim. The Mishnah would be talking about a case where he already has a wife and he already has children. So he's already been Mekayim period of Rivian. And he doesn't also have the Inyan that is a person that's supposed to be married. Even when there's no Inyan of children, there's still the mitzvah to be married. A person shouldn't be a... But when he's already married, he's marrying a second wife, and he already has children, he already has a boy and a girl according to Basil, or two boys according to Bishamai, he's been Makayim period already. So for him to get married is a matter of Rishus. So it's not a matter of a mitzvah under these circumstances.
Don't you have, if you have the opportunity to be favored Arabia, even if you have already children, you still...
So that's why we're saying, even, there is a slight mitzvah, Rashi says, Katz mitzvah itza, right, because that you should still try to continue having children, but it's not as much of a mitzvah as if you don't have a wife at all, or you don't have a proper number of children at all, but that's what we're saying, yeah. Then we said, lechotzen v'lo miyabim, that you're not do chalitza or yibum. Again, the question is, v'ha mitzvah kavit, aren't you doing a mitzvah? Again, according to Rashi, why are we calling it Rishus? And according to Tosfos, why are we disallowing it on Shabbos? The answer is, the Mishnah would be talking about a case where there is an older brother available. And in fact, the ideal mitzvah is that the oldest brother should be the one who performs Yibum. This is, the Gemara in Yevamos explains that this is almost the only case in the whole Torah where you have a pasuk where the pasuk is saying something, but we don't understand it according to its simple surface meaning. The pasuk says you do Yibum, and then it says that the firstborn that she bears will go on the name of his dead brother. So you would think, reading the pasuk Balabatish, you would think it means that the woman's first child should be named after the older, should be named after the brother who died, or at least that he has his neshama, whatever it is. No, the Gemara says in Yevamos that's not what it means. Is referring back to the previous generation. The Bechor of that family, the Bechor that the mother of all these brothers gave birth to, the first, the oldest among the brothers, he is the one who should be doing the Yibum. Before, ahead of any of the other brothers. And so you have a bunch of brothers. You have Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Levi dies. Ideally, Reuben should be doing the Yibum. If Reuben doesn't want to, then you have it between Shimon and Yehuda. Yeah. That's what we're saying. The ideal mitzvah is that the oldest one should be doing Yibum. So therefore, we're talking about when the Mishnah is calling it Rishut, it's talking about Shimon or Yehuda doing the Yibum or the Chalitza. Where for them, it's not the main mitzvah for them anyway. Really, Reuben should be doing it. Yes. The cooler time am I, and then so the question is, all these things that the Mishnah had mentioned, that you can't do a Din Torah or Kedushin or Chalitza or Yibum, why not? Zera Shem Yichtav. The reason with all of them is Zera, because you might end up writing. In the case of the Din Torah, you might end up writing the Psak Din. In the case of Kiddushin, you can write a Shtar Kiddushin. One of the ways of being Mekadosh is with a Shtar, because of the Shtar Rabia. In the case of Chalitza, you would write a Shtar Chalitza. And in the case of Yibum, you'd write a Ksuba. You write a Shtar to give the woman as proof that she had Chalitza, that she's allowed to remarry. It's considered a Maisa Beis, it's not considered a real gift or anything.
You cannot get married without that proof?
Without that, she's also... she could, theoretically, but if anybody comes and says... If she has witnesses, fine, but, you're always going to have witnesses. Yeah, as a practical matter, you want to give her a Ksav Beis Din, yeah. There's also, as far as some of these things, actually it mentions in Shulchan Aruch a different reason also, as far as the Kiddushin and as far as the Yibum, there's also an idea involved, or there's a Kinyan involved. You're being Kona a wife, or in the case of Kiddushin also, you're being Kona, or on the other hand, she's, each of you are being Kona certain things from each other. The husband now has the right to certain things from his wife, certain malachas, for example, she has the right to certain things from him, etc. So that it's all a matter of mechel chamemper as well, in other words.
When two brothers, is there the union of Yibum?
No. And Yibum is only if one brother dies childless, anyway. But no. No. Two brothers that convert Gershon is Gershon. There's no relationship between them. Wait a half a year when we get into Yevamos. We'll be talking about this stuff endlessly. Bela and Mishul Mitzvah, the Mishnah had said, the following things are also as, even though they're a mitzvah, Loi Makdishin, you're not allowed to declare something hektish, V'loi Ma'arichin, or to declare Erchin, V'loi Ma'achrimin, or to declare something Cherem, which goes to Bedek HaBayis. All of them, the Gemara says, Gzeira Rishon Mekach HaMemper. All of them is Gzeira because you may come to buy and sell. Those are all things that are similar to buying and selling. You're taking something out of your Rishos and putting it into the Rishos of Hektish. And Rashi actually says an interesting point over here. Even though Mekach HaMemker is only Dirabanan, and usually you say you don't make Gzera L'Gzera, the reason is, Rashi says, that Rashi is saying actually two things. Number one, Mekach HaMemker is a stronger, it is Dirabanan, but it's a very strong Dirabanan because it's actually mentioned in Psukim, in Nach. Unlike most of the Dirabanan, which come from the Anshek Nesagdolah, from the time of the Bayis Sheni, or whatever, the Gzera against Mekach HaMemker is already mentioned in Tanakh. We have, Nehemiah talks about it a great deal, that there were people buying and selling on Yerushalayim in his times, and he forced them to stop, on Shabbos. Yom Tov, we talked about it
on Shabbos.
No, Shabbos itself, no, Mekach HaMemker on Shabbos is not Daraita. No, it's Dirabanan. It's Dirabanan because you might carry, because you might write, whatever it is, but it's Dirabanan. But it's a Dirabanan that already existed in the time of the time of Tanakh. Even Yeshaya talks about Mitzvah. So therefore, we consider it a stronger kind of, so therefore, the Maharal writes, for example, in Be'er HaGolah, that therefore, we don't apply the problem of Gzera L'Gzera, that it's because Gzera on something which already says in Tanakh is not really considered Gzera L'Gzera. Rashi here gives a different reason, actually, that it's all one Gzera. The Gzera, including Mekach HaMemker, includes all these things as well. Then the Mishnah said, "V'loy magbein truma to meister," that you can't take off truma and meister on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. The question is, the Gemara asks, "Shita?" Of course, you can't. We already know from earlier in the Masechta that you can. Tanei Rabbi Yosef, "La nitzrucha ela litna l'kayin by b'yoyim." So Rabbi Yosef says, the chiddush is even that you're not even allowed to take truma and meister that you're going to be giving to the kayin that very same day. Which you might have thought, it's not such an issue. People, why are you not allowed to take off truma and meiser? Because it's like fixing it, it's like being misakin. Or actually a different explanation is because it's similar to making it hektish, because again you're taking it out of your own reshus and giving it to the Eibishter from whom it goes to the Kohen. But that's one reason, because you're being misakin, you're fixing it, you're making it usable. But in this case, if you're going to be giving it right away to the Kohen, you might have thought, it's not going to be so obvious to people you're doing it for the sake of tikkun. You're doing it because you want to be able to give something to the kohen. Nevertheless, it's still awesome. The Hani Mili, the Gemara says, this is talking about paid tzvili me'esmol. This is talking about when you're not allowed to take truma and nicer is fruit that was already tevel before Yom Tov. In other words, you should have taken off truma and nicer from it before Yom Tov. You didn't. That's your fault. Aval paid tzvili ha'idda, but fruit that became tevel today. Now, how is that possible? You can't process fruit on Yom Tov. The example would be kugan isel aprush minachala. For example, if you needed a dough on Yom Tov, which you're allowed to do, losh is one of the malachas you're allowed to do on Yom Tov. La aprush minachala, and now you want to take challah from it. Makushinen viavin alakayin. Then good, you're allowed to take off challah and you're allowed to give it to the kohen because you're allowed to knead bread. You're allowed to knead dough and make bread on Yom Tov. We talked about earlier in the Masechta because the Chachamim wanted you to be able to have fresh bread. So therefore, once you do, you have to take off challah because otherwise you can't eat it. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, you could in that case, because it wasn't tevel before Yom Tov. Because before Yom Tov, there was no dough. Now, it's not so simple, actually. We did talk about on Yom Tov.
There was no dough, meaning what?
There was no dough. There wasn't chayiv and challah. As opposed to the peiros were chayiv before Yom Tov in Truma and Meiser. Now, we did talk about on Daf Tes that actually in Chutz La'aretz that doesn't necessarily apply because in Chutz La'aretz you're allowed to eat the bread first and separate challah only at the end. So therefore, you don't necessarily have this. So therefore, in Chutz La'aretz you don't have this heter that you're allowed to take challah from the dough on Yom Tov. And actually, even in Eretz Yisrael, it's not so simple nowadays since we don't give the challah to the kohen, we only burn it. Then it's not so simple to take off challah in that case, because what you can do is again you bake the whole thing and then afterwards you break off a piece and you save it and you put it away till after Yom Tov.
Remember something came up, just a funny thing. I usually like bread. I don't want to forget. Really, really nice the dough, and you don't have to give a challah for
challah.
The whole concept of burning it, right?
Technically, that's true. Technically, the mitzvah of challah only applies in Eretz Yisrael, but the Rabbanan, Midrabbanan, they were misakin that we do it outside.
The source was that single thing they just sell, you burn the challah, you should have made the challah at the same time.
Yeah, I've heard that said also.
I don't know, really.
I mean, many people I know actually are careful about it, even because the idea is challah, if the challah is also banah, then if you're burning it in the oven, the same time you're baking the challah is going to absorb the smell from it. It's going to absorb, it's going to absorb taste from it, maybe. Yeah, it's not so far-fetched. I don't know. I know people who are careful about that.
Even in
football, yeah. Now the Gemara asks, so we had three different categories in the Mishnah. So the question is, the last two categories, we had Shvus, Rishus, and Mitzvah. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Why are you putting them in three categories? Lahani Mishum Rishus, Ikka Mishum Shvus Laka. This second group, for example, the ones that we said, you can't judge a Din Torah or do Kedushin or whatever, is it only a matter of Rishus? There's no matter of Shvus. And then the third group, Lahani Mishum Mitzvah, Ikka Mishum Shvus Laka. Again, in the third group, they're only also as a Mitzvah, they're not also as Shvus. All three ones are also because they're Rabbanon, and it's also, which is all, in other words, they're all also as Shvus. We just said the second group also because you might write, the third group are also because Mekach HaMemkar. Those are all Isurim Dirabanan. So what do you mean that you're putting them in different categories? The answer is, right, but the Mishnah is saying it in an ascending order, like needless to say this, but even this. There's no question that something which is only a Shvus, where there's no mitzvah involved, there's no question that's Asur. Even a shvus that affects something which is a rishus, where there is a mitzvah involved, it's just an optional mitzvah, because we said you could find somebody else to do it, or you don't have such a chiyuv to do it, like with the kedushin where you already have a wife and children, etc. Even those are also asur. And the loyim boy shvus to rishus to asur. And not only that, not only the ones of rishus to asur, ella filu shvus to mitzvah nami asur, but even where it affects a mitzvah, like trumas and nisrus, or truma and nisrus or whatever, is also asur. So yes, all of these things are shvus, but we're putting them in different categories because we're saying you should know shvus even applies when there's a rishus, and it applies even when there's a mitzvah.
So there's more categories. There's pure shvus.
There's shvus which affects the rishus, and there's shvus which affects the mitzvah. That's why we have three categories in the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah said, "Kol elu b'yom tov amru," that all of these things apply on Yom Tov. How much more so on Shabbos? And we said the end of the last part of the Mishnah was there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov except melachas eichel nefesh. Master Raminu, I have a contradiction from the very first Mishnah of our parak. Mashilin derech harubu b'yom tov avlei b'shabbos, that you can throw down fruit through a skylight. We said when it's about to rain, you don't want the fruit to get moldy, so you're allowed to throw it down a skylight b'yom tov avlei b'shabbos. So there we have another difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. And that's not a malacha. That's not a malacha. There we have an example of a shvus, which they would gozer on Shabbos, which they wouldn't gozer on Yom Tov. But then you see, so it's not necessarily if the only difference between them is malachas eichel nefesh. There's another difference. Amar Rabbi Yosef, like Kasha, Harab Eliezer, Harab Yeshua. It's not a problem because the two Mishnayos are going, one is going according to Rabbi Eliezer, the other according to Rabbi Yeshua. What is that machloikas? The Tanya. The actual machloikas is like this, that we're going to see from this braisa that we're going to talk about over here, it seems that Rabbi Eliezer makes a gzeira even when there's hefted involved. And Rabbi Yeshua does not. So by the same token, then Rabbi Yeshua would say in the first Mishnah that you're allowed to throw down the fruit because otherwise they'll be hefted. And Rabbi Eliezer would say no. Rabbi Yeshua would say with our Mishnah, Ein Dein Yom Tov Shabbos Ela Malachas Eichel Nefesh Bilvad. Strictly speaking, so no allowances for hefted. So what is
your money?
What is the case? What is the case? Oseb, we learned this earlier. Oseb espinosh enough labor. If two animals, a mother and a child, fell into a pit. Now the Torah says Oseb espinosh. Last week's parasha, Oseb espinosh tishkatu b'yemeh. That you're not allowed to shech them, a mother and child on the same day. So what do? You can't bring them both out and shech them on Yom Tov. But you don't want one or the other of them to die in there. So Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a malah asarishin, I'm an asla shoychdei. So Rabbi Eliezer says, you can bring up the first, you bring up one of them, okay, in having in mind the shechted, and then you actually shecht it. Basheni, what do you do as far as the second one? You can't take it out, because at that point you're not allowed to shecht it anymore until the end of the day. So what you do is, oysalat parnosabim kaima, you arrange, you send down the food and whatever else it needs for comfort in its place, kadesh alayomos, so it doesn't die, but you can't actually schlep it out.
Wait
till after Yom Tov to schlep it out. Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua says, Malas Rishon Amanasal Shechtei. You can bring up the first one, having in mind you're going to shecht it, saying I'm going to shecht this one. The Ena Shechtei. Then after you bring it out, you don't shecht it. You say, you know what? This one looks a little scrawny. This one looks a little scrawny. Let me bring out the other one. It'll be fatter. I'll shecht that one. Then you make a trick with Malay Asheni and you bring up the second one. Now that you have them both out, Rotzeh Zeh Shechet, you can check whichever one you want. Yeah, the other one you can't check that till after Yom Tov, but at least you have both of them out. So we see that Rabbi Yeshua is allowing something because it's tested, and Rabbi Eliezer is not. Abaya says, who says? Mimai, where do you see that that's the point, that that's the reason, that that's the difference between the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah? Dilma ad kamla kamar Rabbi Eliezer hasmel with the apshir of panasa. In that case, Rabbi Eliezer maybe is saying that you can't bring the second one out. Why? Because you have a way of saving the situation. You're able to bring down food to there to feed the animal while it's still in the pit. So you won't necessarily lose it. But here, where the fruit is on the roof, you have no, there's no parnasa. You either throw it down through the skylight or it's going to get moldy. So maybe light. Maybe even there, maybe Rabbi Eliezer would agree with the first Mishnah of our parak that you're allowed to throw it down. Inami, or you could say the other way around. Ad kan lekamer Rabbi Yeshua hasmel the epshel yarumi. That's what we're arguing. Who says? Maybe the reason why he said there is because there is no hefsed necessarily. The animal won't necessarily die. You have a way of feeding it. The fruit is necessarily going to rot.
And he doesn't believe in
that, that's our assumption is he didn't believe in Hesed. Now that's why Abaya is challenging that assumption. Inami, or you could say the other way around. Ad kam lakom Rabbi Shua hasamel of the Epshali Arumi. Maybe why is Rabbi Shua Bitbeko in the case of the Oseh? That's nice, because you're able to do a harama. Yeah, in other words, you do have, theoretically, if you brought up the first one and it really was scrawny or whatever, you would. There's no question you'd be allowed to bring up the second one, because that's the one you intend to share. So it is possible to do. There is a way of doing it that amounts to a kind of heter. Maybe when it comes to throwing the fruit down, there's no harama involved. So maybe maybe Rabbi Yeshua would also agree that you're not allowed to in that case. So you can't necessarily say that the first mishnah of our parak is like Rabbi Yeshua, and the second one is like Rabbi Eliezer. There's different considerations involved. Ela Amar Papa. So note, Papa says, like Kasha, it's still not a Kasha. Habit Shammai, Habit Hillel. The second Mishnah is according to Bet Shammai. The first one about the Mashilin is Bet Hillel. Did Shana, we learned earlier in the Masechta, Bet Shammai, En Metzi, and Lois, a cotton voice, a lulav, a lois, Sefer Torah, Lusha Sarabim. Bet Shammai says that you're not allowed to carry a child or a lulav or a Sefer Torah out into the street on Yom Tov. Or Bet Hillel Matirin, and Bet Hillel says it's Mutter. So we see from that, what was the idea? We said that Beis Hillel held of the concept of hoyil, that once you're allowed to do a malacha for Eich Nefesh, then you're allowed to do it for other purposes as well. Beis Shammai, you're allowed to carry food, therefore you're allowed to carry anything else you need for Yabdu. Beis Shammai didn't believe in that. So therefore, in our Mishnah, Ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos ala Eichel Nefesh bilvad, that would be according to Beis Shammai, strictly Eichel Nefesh. The first Mishnah that was Nefesh, that said that here's a case where you're allowed to do something that you normally wouldn't be allowed to do on Shabbos, is according to Beis Hillel. But who believe, right? They're saying you're allowed to do this tiltle, right? I think I ask. Still, Jumaloi, he's still maybe not. Ad kamla kamer b'shamay hasam ala haisa. Maybe b'shamay is only being machmir there as far as actually carrying out into the street, which is an issur d'oraisa. Avol tiltoloi, but maybe when it comes to handling things, maybe they would be makel. Maybe.
How do you know
it's carrying on? Because that's what they said. Ein mitzian, lo yitzakot, lo yitzalol, lo. But maybe they would say, maybe tiltul is different. Maybe they'd be mako on tiltul. So when, again, the first Mishnah, when it says, Mashilim peiros derech harubah, that involves tiltul, that involves picking up the fruit and moving it. Who says that? Beis Shammai would be machma on that. Maybe they would be mako. And then you still don't have anybody who would be saying that there's no difference except erechol nefesh. So Gemara answers back, you can't say that. Also, tiltul lapsar of haitahu. I mean, what's the whole reason why tiltul is also? What's the whole reason why the Chachamim made it zeta that you're not allowed to move certain kinds of things on Shabbos or on Yom Tov? Is because that leads to haitah. You start doing haitah by picking up something and carrying it around your house. So necessarily, yes, if Beis Shammai is being machmer on haitah on Yom Tov, they're also going to be machmer on tiltul. So therefore, if there's something that you're not allowed to otherwise, that you're otherwise not allowed to move on Shabbos, according to them, you wouldn't be allowed to move it on Yom Tov either. Unless it's directly for Eichel Nefesh, which this is not, the Mashiach in Paris. Which Rashi says, theoretically, that according to that, it would come out according to Beis Shammai, you shouldn't be allowed to carry anything on Yom Tov. The same way as they're saying you can only carry food on Yom Tov, why you're allowed to carry the kid or the Sefer Torah or whatever inside the house. Rashi says, basically, because otherwise, otherwise it's impossible. You're not going to have Oinuk Shabbos and Simchas Yom Tov if you're not allowed to carry anything around. So they're make on that to the extent that you're allowed to carry things around your house, but not to take them outside. There, they necessarily have to make a distinction between tiltul and haitzah. But the basic idea is, tiltul and haitzah go together. So therefore, if they're going to be machmer on haitzah, and yom tov, they're machmer on tiltul as well. So therefore, we're back to our answer that yes, our Mishnah, when it says, ein ben yom tov l'shabbos ala echal nefesh v'vad, is according to Beis Shammai. The first Mishnah, Mashulim Perot Derech HaRubah, is according to Beis Hillel. These next couple of Mishnayos now are going to shift to the dinim of tchumim. We talked a lot about Tchumen in Eruvin, but here in Eruvin we were mostly focusing on Tchumen from the point of view of Shabbos. few were going to be talking about it more from the point of view on Yom Tov. On Shabbos, you anyway can't carry things outdoors, so therefore a tchum on Shabbos is more relevant to where you yourself are allowed to walk. On Yom Tov, it's more relevant to where you're allowed to carry things. And that's what these next couple of Mishnayos are going to be dealing, and the Gemara on them is going to be dealing with the various aspects of that.
In a way, it's a bit of a continuation.
About Shabbos, Yom Tov, yeah. Yeah. Well, I was mentioning yesterday when Jodas HaRishonim wants to say on the previous Mishnah that originally the previous Mishnah was part of Masechta Shabbos, and later on they put it in Beisa. That's why we had Yom Tov and Shabbos and Yom Tov. So he says, by the same token, you see these next few Mishnayos also, sort of, so to speak, more belong to Hilchos Shabbos than to Hilchos Yom Tov. And in Shulchan Aruch, in fact, they're in Hilchos Shabbos rather than in Hilchos Yom Tov. They're in Hilchos Tchumen, which is a part of Hilchos Shabbos.
Why is that?
Because they deal with Tchumen, because in Shulchan Aruch it deals with all the dinim of Tchumen altogether. The Mishnah says, "Habehema v'hakelim karagda abaylim." An animal, or utensils, or clothes, or whatever, go according to the feet of the owners. Meaning, if I own a shirt, and I have only a certain distance I'm allowed to walk on Yom Tov, that shirt can only go within that distance as well. So, if let's say, for example, so if I live in this city over here, and I placed an eruv tchumen over here, which is going to allow me to walk more in this direction, but not anywhere in this direction, let's say. Then if somebody else borrows that shirt from me, they also can't take the shirt beyond the city limits in this direction. Because I myself am only allowed to walk.
The shirt belongs to you.
Right.
And the tchum also.
So the tchum that I have, the shirt, yeah. So we're saying the animal, the kalim, same thing.
It goes on the
owner of it, that's what we're saying. However, we're going to have some exceptions. If a person gives an animal to his son or to a shepherd to watch, also then it also goes according to the owner, not according to the son or the roya. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. That has details of that. Kalim amiyuchadim la'echem and achim shavavayis. Another case, if you have kalim where you have a whole bunch of brothers living together in a house, let's say they inherited the house and all the property from their father, but they haven't gotten around to splitting it up yet. But you have certain things that are specific to one of the brothers, tefillin, for example, let's say, harei lekaraglo, then they go only according to his feet, they go according to his tchum. V'she'enen miyachad, and the ones that are not specific to one of them, the ones that they all share in common, harei lekamakam shahochin, then it goes according to where all of them can walk. Meaning, so if you have some of them put an eruv tchumen in this direction, let's say, and some of them put an eruv tchumen in that direction, then you're limited to a very small area where this thing can be moved around. And if one of them put his eruv tchumen 2,000 amas this way, and the other one 2,000 amas that way, then the object is stuck, right? You can't move it anywhere.
You can move it.
Well, you can move it around in the city, actually. Yeah, the city itself is common for all of them. People say you're going to be doing that, so yeah, can't be helped.
Why is it stuck?
Because consider, for example, one person puts his eruv over here. His tchum now is 2,000 amas in every direction from the eruv. So it goes, let's say, from his house, or from the edge of the city, from his house, let's say, to keep things simple, 2,000 amas to there, and then another 2,000 amas in that direction.
Right.
Meanwhile, the other guy put his eruv 2,000 amas in this direction. So he's able to walk from here in this direction.
Right.
The keli itself, if they own it in common, now you can't move it in any direction.
Which one cannot take the
keli? Right, as opposed to if it belongs specifically to one of them, then he can carry it anywhere in his tchum. No, so we're talking about a bunch of brothers living together in the house. And yeah, the reason we're mentioning specifically brothers is because we talk about an eruv. If a balabayas puts down an eruv, for example, then implicitly it includes everybody in his house. And unless they say otherwise.
Right.
But as opposed to brothers who are all living in the house, who are all living on the estate. I mean, each of them is a person of his own. So they could well be making different eruvin in different directions.
This behemoth is a...
This behemoth, we're talking about a keli, whatever it is, yeah.
It's owned by...
It's owned jointly by all of them. Another case, Hashoyol Kli Mechaver Me'erev Yom Tov, if somebody borrows a keli from his friend on Erev Yom Tov, then it's Keragle Hashoyol, then it goes according to the borrower. Because since he already had it in his Rishus before Yom Tov, then it goes according to his tchum, not according to the owner's. So very well then, if the owner made his eruv in this direction, and the borrower made his eruv in this direction, then fine, you can carry it in this direction.
Because he borrowed it before Yom Tov.
And he borrowed it before Yom Tov, right. And actually, so we're going to talk about in the Gemara, that we talked about before, about giving the animal to your son or to a shepherd, also there's a difference in that regard between before Yom Tov or on Yom Tov. Yeah. B'yomtov, if you borrow the keli on Yom Tov, kiragli amashil, then it goes according to the owner. Because at the beginning of Yom Tov, it was in his rishus. V'cheino isha shalom achaberta tavlum, or the same way if a woman borrows from her friend spices to make a stew, for mayim umalach leisasa, if she borrows water or salt for her dough, same thing. Harei lekurag leshtehem. Then because she borrowed it on Yom Tov, it can only go in the place where both of them are able to eat. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Chumim still applies. Yes. Yes. So then even so, though, so you have it goes according to both of them. Well, actually, so what happens is, actually, the resulting dough, what you have is now the flour and the dough came from one of them, the water or the salt came from the other one. So now the dough, the ready-made dough or loaf of bread, it can only go in the place where both of them, in effect, parts of it belong to both, and therefore you can only go according to where both of them can walk. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda, Potter b'mayim. Rabbi Yehuda said that's Potter by water. In other words, you don't have to worry about the tchum of the water, but Pnei She'en Behen Mamash. Because in the end, in the dough, you don't see the water in it.
Yeah, but there's no dough without water.
Obviously, but in the finished product, you don't see the water. The salt will, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the salt we'll talk about. Now, the salt is a deal that you can't see the salt either. Right. The Gemara is going to talk about, we'll get to that tomorrow, that the salt we're talking about a very coarse salt, where, yes, you do see it in the finished product. Yeah. But the
not our salt.
Not our, no, so we're talking about like kosher salt or whatever, yeah. Like rock salt or something, yeah. So the Gemara says, Masnissin deloikir abdoisa. Our Mishnah seems to be not like abdoisa. When it talks about this thing about giving the animal to a shepherd, where we said that you go according to the owner rather than according to the shepherd's tomb, that seems to be not like abdoisa. Titania, abdoisa aimer. If Amri lo Abba Shol, or others say that Abba Shol says, Halakeach behemah mechaverim Erev Yom Tov. If somebody buys an animal from his friend on Erev Yom Tov, Af afishalei matzur le'elav Yom Tov, even though the person only gave it over to him on Yom Tov, Harehi kerag le'alakeach, then it goes according to the buyer. And continues, V'hamoyse behemah l'roi, if a person gives an animal to a shepherd to watch for him, Af afishalei matzur le'elav Yom Tov, even though you only gave it to him on Yom Tov, Harehi kerag le'aroi, then it goes according to the shepherd. So our Mishnah had said it goes according to the owner. Why? According to Abdoisa. For sure, if you gave it to him before Yom Tov, it goes according to the shepherd. But even if you gave it to him on Yom Tov, we're saying it still goes according to the shepherd's tomb, not the owner. So our Mishnah is not like that, it seems. The answer is, the Gemara says, no, I feel the same with Abdoisa. No, you could even say that the Mishnah is like Abdoisa. But like Kasha, because it's not a problem. Kan b'roya echad, kan b'shnei royim. It depends whether there is one shepherd there or two. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says that what it means is there are two shepherds in town. If there's only one shepherd in town, everybody who owns an animal in this town gives their animal to that shepherd to watch. So therefore, even if you only gave it to him on Yom Tov, you knew before Yom Tov you're going to be giving it to him. And the same thing when you're buying the animal. Even though the person only gave you the animal on Yom Tov, you knew ahead of time, the seller and the buyer knew ahead of time that you're going to be giving it to the shepherd to watch. So therefore, it's like it was done before Yom Tov. As opposed to if there's two shepherds or more in town, you don't know. He could give it to either one. And therefore you can't make it go according to the shepherd. Therefore, you have to make it go according to him.
Where do you give it? Did you give it before Yom Tov?
If you gave it before Yom Tov, there's no question it goes according to the shepherd you gave it to. But if you gave it to him on Yom Tov, that's what we're saying, then it goes according to you. Right. Now, that's Rashi's explanation. There's a different explanation based on the Rif, which then a bunch of Rishonim argue on the Rif's reason, that what we're talking about over here is whether you give it to one shepherd to watch versus to two. And then, like I said, there's a number of different explanations why, in that case, if you give it to two shepherds to watch, why it goes according to the owners. One of them is a very balabatish answer. I don't remember who says it. But I think the Magen Mishnah talks about it. You don't want, if there's two shepherds, you don't want it to be limited in the area that it can graze in. You never know. Each of these shepherds could have made an Eidov in a different direction. So you want it. So you would rather, in that case, that it keeps your tchum in order that at least it has a full 2,000 amos in every direction to walk. So great.
So that's the answer.
If you're giving it to only one shepherd, then it's only one tchum to worry about. So therefore, it goes according to his tchum. But if you're giving it to two shepherds to watch, where each one of them could have a different tchum, then you want it. You yourself don't want them to be koine to the extent that it should go according to their tchum. You want it to keep your tchum in order that it'll be able to graze freely. That's one explanation. There's a bunch of other ones.
Why don't you just make a t'nai with them?
Because ultimately you have both of them watching it. But that's the thing. You, in effect, you are making a t'nai. You're saying you're making a t'nai, in effect, that I want it to be able to go according to my tchum. There's other answers as well. There's the idea that if you have two shepherds, then you're dealing with the concept. Then you're dealing with the issue of breda, which we're going to talk about later on this amud. So then which tchum did it end up getting? Maybe it doesn't end up getting either one, and that's why it sticks with yours. There's another idea that Magid Mishnah talks about that when you give it to your son, you don't intend it for it to leave your reshus. By the same token, when you're giving it to two shepherds, you don't intend for it to be leaving your reshus, etc.
In
Shulchan Aruch it brings this halacha that there's a difference between one and two shepherds. But all these discussions are based on all this discussion is based on what Rashi says here and on what the Rif and the Rambam are asking about it.
Yeah.
The Rif has his halacha in the back of the Gemara where he summarizes the halacha that comes out from the Gemara. The Gemara says Dekanami. In fact, we can prove that because from the words of the Mishnah. And it's funny, but no Oloroya, because the Mishnah had mentioned that you're giving it to your son or to a shepherd, which implies that there's a certain similarity. Just like when you're giving it to your son, you don't mean for it to go out of your reshus. The same thing when you're giving it to a shepherd. So also, therefore, it has to mean that there's a difference between one shepherd or two shepherds. Shmami not, so that proves it.
In other words, because
so that's the difference. In other words, the Mishnah is not contradicting Rabdosa. When Rabdosa says that it's always according to the shepherd's tchum, that means when there's only one shepherd. According to Rashi, there's only one shepherd in town, and according to the Rif, it means that there's only one shepherd going to be watching it. As opposed to when Mishnah says it goes according to your tchum, that's talking about when there's shnei royim, according to these two definitions. Either there's more than one shepherd in town, so you didn't know before Yom Tov which one it was going to be, or you have both of them, and then for all the various reasons that you don't want both of them to share the tchum. Amar Rav Baba Chana, Rav Yechanan, halacha k'Rav Deitza. So in fact, Rav Baba Chana says in the name of Rav Yechanan that the halacha is like Rav Deitza. You might ask, so Miyam Rav Yechanan hachi, but did Rav Yechanan really say that? But Amar Rav Yechanan halacha k'stam Mishnah, Rav Yechanan says. Because that's the next piece of Gemara, these next two lines of Gemara, whoever asked this did not know of this previous discussion that we just had. So that's the question. Right. So therefore, so me Amar Rabbi Yechanan, if Amar Rabbi Yechanan halacha k'stam mishnah, Rabbi Yechanan says as a general rule that halacha is always like a stam mishnah, utznana behemah v'akelim k'rag la'abaylim. And we say in the mishnah that the animal or the kelim go according to the tchum of the owner, not like Rabbi Yosef, who says it goes according to the shepherd. The answer is v'lavo kimna. Well, that's exactly what we just answered. Kan b'rayachad, kan b'shnei rayim. That when is Rabbi Yechanan saying the halacha is like the stam mishnah is in the case when there's shnei rayim, as opposed to when is Rabbi Yosef saying his din when there's one raya. So yes, the halacha could be like both. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, shnayim sheshalu chaluk echad b'shutvus. If two people borrowed one shirt in partnership, ze leilach v'shachlus the Beis Medrash, one wants to use it Yom Tov morning to go to the Beis Medrash, ve'echad v'ze likonis v'abis the Beis HaMishnah, and the other one wants to use it Yom Tov evening, the night of Yom Tov, to go to a Beis HaMishnah, to a Chasana, for example, to a Shevet office. Now, suppose further that one person made his Erev to the north of the city, and the other one made an Erev to the south of the city. Well then, so the one who made the Erev in the north can only go as far north as the one who made the Erev in the south is allowed to go. So it means, in other words, let's say one of them made his Erev 500 amas from the city in this direction, and the other one 500 amas from the city in this direction. It means the one who made his Eruv over here, 500 amas away from the city, is allowed to walk till here, no problem. It's much less than 2,000 amas away. The city itself counts as 4 amas. But he's not allowed to walk a full 2,000 amas beyond here. He's only allowed to walk another 1,000 amas, or another 990, whatever's left of his 2,000 amas, right. So the one who borrowed it to go to the north is only allowed to walk that 996 amas to the north. And the same thing in the reverse. The one who made the Erev to the south is only allowed to go as far as the one from the north is allowed to go. And if they made the tchum exactly in the middle, meaning they both put, there's no overlap between the two tchum, and we had similar concepts in Erevin, right? That if each of them put his Erev 2,000 amos away from the city, then finished. You can't move the shirt from where it is.
Because
even in the city itself, it depends, actually. It depends. When we say they put a 2,000 amas outside the city, if they put a 2,000 amas from the edge of the city, then no, his tchum actually ends at the edge of the city.
So then
they wouldn't be able to move it either. I mean, put it this way, I shouldn't say 2,000 amas from the edge of the city. He puts a 2,000 amas from his house. and the other one puts the 2,000 amas from his house. But there's not necessarily an overlap. The city only counts as 4 amas only if the whole city is within the 2,000 amas. We learned this in Erevin. Otherwise, no. If you put your Erev 1,500 amas outside the city, and the city is 501 amas long, you're only allowed to walk 500 amas into the city. You have to stop 1 amma before the wall, not the extra amma. Yeah. Itmar. So now they had a discussion on this. Shnayim shalachu behem chavis or behem b'shutfus. What if two people bought a barrel of wine or an animal in partnership? They bought it on Erev Yom Tov. They plan to divide it on Yom Tov. So now on Yom Tov, do we say the same thing that you have to look at the respective tchumen and see where you're allowed to take it? Rav amar chavis muteres or behem asura. So Rav says in the case of the barrel, it will be mutter. We will allow them to split each one.
Take.
No, not the barrel. We mean the wine. Each one will be allowed to take his half of the wine from the barrel and carry it wherever he's allowed to go on Yom Tov. Ubehema asura, whereas the animal would be asura, which we'll talk about soon why. Ushmul amasura chavis nami asura, where Shmuel says even the barrel would be asura. So Shmuel, we understand straightforwardly, right? Shmuel holds that there's no issue, that you can't apply breira, even by a thing drabanan, here that's common. So therefore, we can't say when they divided up on Yom Tov that retroactively this was the half that was intended for them from before Yom Tov. No, you can't say that. So therefore, you don't know. The two halves were mixed together before Yom Tov. Now you may be taking something that was part of the other guy's part before Yom Tov that was supposed to be in his tchum, and you're going to be carrying it into your tchum. So Shmuel, we understand. But the question is, Ma'ika Sava Rav. What does Rav hold that he's saying, that he's making this distinction between the wine and the animal? Ika Sava Yesh Breira, if he holds that Yesh Breira, that we can't apply Breira in a din de rabbanon, I feel a behemoth tishri, then even the animal should be mutter. The ikasava embrera, and if he holds embrera, if he lochavas nami asura, then even the barrel should be asura. The answer is la'olam kasava yeshbrera. He does hold that you can apply brera, at least in dinim dirabanan. Shanya behema, but it's different by an animal. Jekayanti tchumin mehadadi, because what happens is all this time the tchumin, the respective parts of the animal that are going to be brought to the two tchumin, have been taking nourishment from each other. So therefore, in other words, what you have basically is there isn't brera. You can't say this part is distinct from this part, because each one has been taking from the other one. Each one, the blood circulates throughout the whole body, the hormones, whatever are going. No, but the wine, once you split it, because the wine is sloshing around in the barrel, fine. But once you divide, it's not a living thing. Wine is not a living thing. An animal is a living thing. So therefore, it's being yonik. Each part is taking nourishment from the other part, even from the beginning.
It's not moving.
No, not even a matter of moving. The wine, let's say, at the beginning of Yom Tov, there was a moment there at the beginning of Yom Tov when you could say that the wine here, one half of it is one person's, one half of it is the other person's. Or rather, what you can say is when you divide it, retroactively we say that this half and this half were distinct. And an animal, you can't do that all the time. From the beginning of Yom Tov, the blood and whatever have been circulating. Tosfos has a different explanation. Tosfos says that the vort is that throughout Yom Tov, the animal was still growing. So yes, maybe you could say the animal as it existed at Bein HaShemashos, maybe you could say you divide one half to one and one half to the other. What are you going to do with the extra part that grew between the beginning of Yom Tov and when you sheft it?
Right.
It doesn't matter. First of all, it's not necessarily. And second of all, who cares? So, Amri Leir of Kahana V'Rav Asi L'Rav. So now, when Rav says this thing, that the Chavis is Mutter, but the animal is Asur, so Rav Kahana and Rav Asi asked him, what are you telling me? L'Issu Mukta L'Choshu, L'Issu Tchumin Choshu. You're not worried about the problem of Mukta, but you're worried about the Issu Tchumin. Meaning, you know that it's Mukta, because effectively each one is thinking to himself, I can't have the other one's portion. We bought this animal to divide, so each one of us is going to be getting our portion. I don't have the other person's portion in mind to eat. But yet, obviously, you're not saying that that's the issue. You're saying the issue is a matter of tchumen. Why aren't you concerned about the issue of mukta as well? And Tosfos points out. I mean, yeah, they could give each other they could give each other a present. But that's why Tosfos says that if we're talking about mukta, we mean the extra growth of the animal. But they could give each other a present. But Mepharshim counter to Tosfos, and Nei Yeshua, I think, says that, yeah, they could give each other a present, but the fact is they bought this animal in order to divide. So we have to assume each one of them doesn't have in mind the other half of it. Shosik Rav. So Rav was quiet. Now, as we had earlier in the Masechta, when Rav didn't answer to a challenge that was posed to him, does that mean Taki gave up his opinion, or does it mean he didn't consider it worth answering? We talked about then the famous thing that it talks about Exodus in a number of places that shot the grab because he had a good answer, but he had a good answer, but he couldn't express it. Like he had it in chokhmah, but he couldn't express it. He couldn't express it in words. Yeah. Nur Pnimius, yeah. My Havi Allah, so what's the bottom line? Rav Hoshi Amar Yesh Breir. So Rav Hoshi says that we do apply Breira, so therefore the animal and the chavis would be mutter. Rav Yechanan Amar Ein Breira, whereas Rav Yechanan says that there's no Breira, and therefore both of them are also like Shmuel. Question is, the Gemara asks, suffer Rav Hoshi Yesh Breira? Does Rav Hoshi really hold that of Breira in a case like this? Vatnan, but we learned in a Mishnah, we had this earlier in the Masechta, also in a discussion of Breira. Hames Babayis, if you have a dead body in a house, Veloif Sochem Havre, and the house has many entrances, where we said that, we talked about then that each of the entrances, any Kaili that's within the entrance, that's under the door frame, is Tomei, because you don't know which entrance the mess is going to be taken out of. So all of them are Tomei. Niftach HaKamehen, if one of the drawers is opened up, who Tomei the Kulon Torah, and only that one is Tomei, only the Kalim in that drawer are Tomei, all the rest of them are Tahar. Chishav Lohitziya Ba'achat Ba'echamehen, but if you thought to take out the mess through one of the doors, Obechalon Shiesh Ba'abal Abba, or you plan to take it out through a window that's at least 4x4 Tvachim, Matzelasal Tzachim Kulon, then that door or that window, even though you only thought about it, you didn't actually open it up yet, it saves all the other doors. We said that this only applies if you thought which door or which window you're going to use before the mess died, because once the mess died, you can't apply Breira. And Basilo says, even after the mess died, you're allowed to. V'itmar Allah. And then we said on that, Amar Aposhia, L'tayras of Sachem, V'tan Allah Ba. The Machlokas is only, from now on, are the doorways Tahar. Meaning, from now on, meaning if you were to, after you made that decision, and you put a Kaili down in one of the doorways, will it now be Tahar? But Mikan Alaba Ein Lamapre Alay. But we're not saying retroactively. Why? Because we're saying Ein Breira. We're saying even though in the end you decided that it's going to be one particular door you're going to take out the mess to, so only that one is going to become Tame. Nevertheless, you don't apply that retroactively. You don't say that all along that was the one intended, and therefore any Kaili that was under the other doorways all this time remains Tahar. No, Rav Hoshia is saying it stays Tame. So therefore we see that Rav Hoshia doesn't hold of Breira.
Because you cannot go back in time. Maybe yeah. It's just physical.
No, because this whole concept that all the drawers are Tomei is also Dirabanan. The Gemara says, yeah, you're right, Epoch, you have to flip it around. Rav Hoshia Amar Ein Breira, Rav Yechanan Amar Yesh Breira. We have to flip it around. Rav Hoshia in our machlokes over here, by the chavis and the animal, is saying Ein Breira, and Rav Yechanan is saying Yesh Breira. I think let's leave it over here, I think, and we'll continue tomorrow with what Rav Yechanan actually holds about Breira.